Hey everybody, this is Eric Mann. You're on Voices from the Frontlines. Today we're going to do the whole show about the United States' plan to invade Syria. We're going to have Norman Solomon on, who's written an excellent article in Truth Out today about the politics of Congress. I think a lot of us are going to just assume that we know the basic scenario. We've been here before. But there's a lot to figure out, and there's a lot to be done. And Norman, how you doing?
Under the world circumstances here.
Yeah, well, for our listeners, I think many of you know Norman. It says here that he's, of course, I know he's the co-founder of Roots Action, founding director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. His books include War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. And also, he ran a very aggressive and successful campaign to run for Congress. He was not elected in the Democratic primary, but it was one of the best tries. Doesn't get you the complete gold ring, but it was a very impressive campaign. Norman knows a lot about Congress, and that's going to be the main subject. I mean, we're going to start with assumption in our listeners that we don't have to prove to you the pretenses of the United States. We're not going to disprove on this show the threats and the claims of chemical warfare. We know the United States has used chemical and biological warfare. But what we want to talk about, so let's talk, get right to the question of can it be stopped? Because that's what Norman's excellent article today was about, which is Obama will, this was in Truth Out magazine, Obama will launch a huge propaganda blitz and may attack Syria even if he loses the vote in Congress. So what I'd like you to do, Norman, is first, let's assume none of us know anything about the background to this story, about what the struggle is inside of Syria, what role the United States playing, what role is Israel playing. And maybe we'll spend like 7 or 8 minutes on that. And then we'll get into what's going on in terms of the struggle inside of Congress, inside the Democratic Party, inside the establishment. And then we'll also talk about what can the movement do. Is that a deal?
Yes. Well, the spark that really set off, I think, so much and often positive developments in the Middle East was what's called the Arab Spring, and partly because of the disclosures of Bradley Manning laying bare the corruption and suppressive efforts of so many regimes in the Middle East, in almost always in alliance, not always, but frequently in alliance with the United States. The fall of the Ben Ali regime in Tunisia, in part, you know, sparked by that. And in Syria, first a nonviolent struggle, but gradually, more and more, there was an insurgency. And the U.S. government began to more and more put in aid in terms of weapons and training and so forth, covert, sometimes just tacitly winking and nodding as Saudi Arabia and so forth provided the wherewithal. And so, you know, let me make clear that I think the Assad regime is a terrible dictatorship, and many of the forces aligned with or as part of the rebels are themselves horrendous and, you know, guilty of terrible crimes. And I want to remind people that, you know, now we commonly agree, not just progressives, but across much of the political board, that the Saddam Hussein regime, as bad as it was, should not have been the catalyst or cause for the U.S. to launch the horrible invasion. But now we're hearing the same siren song that, oh, this dictator's so bad, so the U.S. has to go in and extend its attacks on many countries to yet one more.
Well, let me ask you to start with, Norman. How would you break down the politics? Obviously, it's an insurgency. What is it claim its struggle is with the Assad regime?
Well, I don't want to claim to be an expert on Syria, but I think something that's very clear is that certainly at this point, and it's been true for a long time, the insurgency is not one insurgency. There are many different factions, and increasingly, despite what Secretary of State Kerry claimed today in front of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, more and more the military dominant factions are like al-Qaeda, if not al-Qaeda. They are very extreme ideological Islamists who are not in any way interested in democracy or what should appropriately be called human freedom. So you have at this point, you know, under tremendous pressure and a lot of slaughter, you have a lot of different factions who are part of what the Western press calls rebels. We hear the figure that 100,000 Syrians have died in this civil war. And I wouldn't question that that's true, but I do want to point out that it's very unusual for the U.S. news media to note the information that perhaps 40%, and nobody knows the exact figures, but perhaps 40% of those 100,000 people were the government troops and were aligned with the government. And so the inference is that, you know, all that killing is all on one side. And as is so often the nature with a civil war, it's in lots of different directions.
Well, one thing that if Howard Zinn were here, but anybody who's read U.S. history knows, is that the United States has no human rights interest in anything. So we should just cut right to the chase.
Yeah.
They will support, as we know, they supported al-Qaeda against the Soviet Union. Then they thought that al-Qaeda was their enemy. And then they go back and attack the Taliban. Now they're allying with the Taliban. The question is, this is all such made-up stuff that I almost don't want to insult our intelligence to try to, you know, even give the arguments their validity. So let's get to the point, which is, so why is the United States doing this? Because we know it's not for any humanitarian reasons. We know it has nothing to do with chemical weapons. We know John Kerry is a liar from A to Z. I mean, such a hypocrite. We knew him in Vietnam Veterans Against the War, where he was very, very good. And we all knew the guy was an opportunist even then. We knew he was out for himself. He was hated inside of Vietnam's Veterans Against the War, I just want to say. Not because he didn't do good things, but because he was almost pitching himself as a peace candidate, which he thought was the winning team at that time. So now he switched to be a war candidate. But I just want to say, for those of us who have been in the movement for a long time, this man will unfortunately say anything to advance his own career. So I don't have any interest in hearing John Kerry's story. Is why are they going in, Norman? That's the question.
Well, on the one hand, an excuse and pretext is very different than a real reason. And just to very briefly, you know, annotate what you said, the Egyptian government a few weeks ago killed in the same neighborhood, the same amount of people as the reported chemical attack, you know, close to 1,500 people.
Right.
Now, if the U.S. government is so concerned about the slaughter of nonviolent protesters and civilians, then why did the U.S. government say virtually nothing to complain about the Egyptian regime slaughtering all those people, and at the same time not interrupt the flow of well over $1 billion a year? And I think it's a good response to all these questions that come up. Well, don't we have to do something when people's rights are being abused and people are being slaughtered? And the answer is yes, and the first thing to do is to stop paying for it, whether it's Bahrain or Egypt or anywhere else. But that said, I mean, certainly there's a very complex three-dimensional, at least chessboard game going on, and I believe that because, contrary again to what Kerry said today, there is no viable military force in Syria that could take control of a government that the United States would be really, really happy with, the real goal is to keep the conflict going. They really don't, and I think even the Israeli government does not want to bring down Assad, because then they would have upheaval and they wouldn't know where it would go, and some of the al-Qaeda types might even dominate Syria. So they don't want that. But on the other hand, they are totally wanting to reduce or eliminate as much as possible Assad's power. So it's an attempt really to keep the pot stirred up, and I don't think it's that we need to, you know, project that the president wakes up wanting to cause people to suffer every day. It's a geopolitical game that's going on, and the net result is that, as you said, Eric, and I think this is true, human rights is not the reason for U.S. policy. It is an excuse and a propaganda message for it.
That voice is Norman Solomon, who's been a really strong, consistent anti-war voice. And what I like about Norman Solomon is he's a good analyst, but he's a better organizer. So he does things, not just think things. So, Norman, I just want to ask one more question about the geopolitical situation, and then I want to go to the sort of, you know, what's going on in Congress and what real possibilities there are. Where does Russia come in with this?
Well, Russia is aligned with the Syrian regime of Assad and with Iran. It's very opposed to U.S. intervention. When you hear a proceeding like the Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing today, there's a frequent mention of Russia or even Iran as though they were somehow interlopers into the region. Like, how dare they have security interests in their own part of the world? And I disagree with many of the Russian policies and their horrible anti-gay policies, their suppression in Chechnya, and on and on. I carry no torch for the Russian government whatsoever, but I think their stance towards opposing U.S. intervention is totally correct, not only, I think, rooted in their alliance with Assad, but also because they don't want to see this tremendous upheaval in the region.
Well, I think one of the things that, this is Eric Mann talking with Norman Solomon. I mean, one of the things I've been thinking about, Norman, is that for those of us in the United States trying to build the left, it's been essential that there be some countervailing power to our own imperialist government. And certainly on the 50th anniversary of the March on Washington, I don't think a lot of people understand is that without the support of the Soviet Union and China, that the civil rights movement would have not had as much leverage on the Kennedy administration in 1963. So similarly, we live in the United States. To me, it's the greatest purveyor of violence in the world, still is, as Dr. King said. And I'd look to Chinese and Russian countervailing power to do anything to stop our government. So in that sense, just like you said, at least Putin is willing to stand up to the United States. But what would be, before we get one more time to Congress, does he have any cards to play?
Well, I think a metaphor as well as a literal reality is Edward Snowden might well be in
a U.S.
prison right now.
That's exactly right. That's a great... That's not it. Thank you for raising that. I was in my head and forgot it. Right. That was such a gutsy call. Good for him.
Absolutely. It's that example of, I think, the countervailing power that you're talking about. And it's so often the case when you have superpowers in collision with each other, they're very good at pointing out the hypocrisies of the other side. And the thing about an independent peace movement and for social justice and to fight sexism and racism and all sorts of bigotry is that we recognize these dynamics, we can call them out, and we can strategically proceed on that basis with that understanding, and we keep our single standard of human rights. And that's why I think there is an international set of movements, you might say, that are able to play that role. It was true 50 years ago, and I think it's true today.
Well, now let's move to, and I definitely agree with you, that independent movements, but we're both saying the same thing. We need independent movements, and we have to hope for some countervailing power against our own government. Now, let's move to Congress. Again, pardon my ignorance, but I'd rather you inform me and our listeners. Tell us just a little bit about the British vote as setting the conditions for this decision that Obama is making to go to Congress.
Yeah, it was really a stunning decision by the British Parliament. Gee, it's just been a week or so ago, as I recall,
right,
that the British Parliament said, we do not approve of the UK helping to launch an attack on Syria. And the Prime Minister Cameron was stunned, as was really much of the world. And I think that's a result of the organizing and the widespread opinion in Great Britain that they've had enough with their own government being, as the saying goes, Uncle Sam's poodle. Right. And they don't want to simply go fetch and go help give a fig leaf to U.S. Aggressive actions. So I think it was a terrific setback for the war planners in terms of an attack on Syria. And it's very notable that Obama felt the need within a couple of days to announce that he would go to Congress for authorization. But there's a huge difference. After the British Parliament voted against a war resolution, the head of the British government, the Prime Minister, said, okay, then we're not going to attack Syria.
Right.
But the President of the United States has already made clear that while he is now going to what he calls request authorization from Congress, he says he has a right to, and it's a clear message, he will attack Syria no matter what Congress does.
Yeah, I want you to develop that. And another thing I just heard him say, you know, his contempt for the United Nations, again, having used it as a fig leaf when he controlled it, saying, I'm not waiting around for the Security Council. The Security Council is a mess. The UN's a mess. So, you know, just how quickly he didn't even pretend to care about an international opinion. So let's go through the fact that at least the British have created, I think, an important historical event, which is even if imperialist powers are going to break the back of their own Congress, most of whom support the wars anyway, this is an important tactical opportunity that we haven't had, because the Gulf of Tonkin was obviously an effort, you know, to avoid a war declaration, etc. So what's going on in Congress? Here's one question I have. I read your article, which is, again, excellent. People should go on. Truth Out, and it says, Obama will launch a huge propaganda blitz and may attack Syria even if he loses the vote in Congress. I'm just going to read a couple of paragraphs. Grassroots pressure has forced President Obama to seek approval for Congress for an attack on Syria. But Obama is hell-bent on ordering a missile assault in that country, and he has two very important aces in the hole. Great opening paragraph, Norman, writer to writer. The administration is about to launch a ferocious propaganda blitz that will engulf a wide range of U.S. media. As a fallback, the president is reserving the option of attacking Syria no matter what Congress does. Now, we'll get to the second part about no matter what Congress does. What's going on in Congress?
I think there is a scurrying for cover that the axis represented by the picture on the New York Times website today of Boehner, Pelosi, and Obama, all of them united now supporting a war resolution, really is symbolic that the centers of both parties, the centers of power, the core of leverage from the top down of the Democratic and Republican parties, they are on the war train.
Right.
They are in the locomotive, and they're throwing in the coal. They want the attack on Syria to happen, and they're pulling out all the stops. But you have significant elements who call themselves progressives among Democrats and libertarians or even Tea Party among Republicans, and they're balking, and they're sick of simply ratifying one war after another. And I think it's very similar to what we saw with the vote over NSA surveillance earlier this summer, where the party hierarchies are with what I like to call the warfare surveillance state.
Right.
But there's, because of response to organizing at the grassroots and just what's happening in the country, there's a whole lot of folks in Congress who are having second and third thoughts. And we, if we organize effectively, I think, may be able to pry them loose to the point that Obama could lose the vote here next week on war on Syria in the Senate and or in the House.
Well, let me ask you this. The voice, again, you're listening to is Norman Solomon, among other things, co-founder of RootsAction.org, an excellent e-organizing center, which we can also talk about. During the war in Vietnam, obviously, we had the amazing breakthrough of Wayne Morris and Ernest Gruening, who were willing in these 98-2 votes to stand up against Lyndon Johnson. We know that in terms of people in Congress, they're pretty vulnerable. I mean, unless they're in a super, super strong district, Nancy Pelosi and Barack Obama will do anything they can to punish them, push them out of committees, ostracize them, just tell them you're just not welcome, run people against them in their own district, tell them, all right, in 2 years when you go back, you're not going to get our endorsement. Given those pressures, who do you see in Congress on either the Senate or the House side who has the power, independence, and will to take on Obama?
Somebody who on this issue as well as on the surveillance issue who has been very strong this year is Alan Grayson from Florida. He's really raising hell. He's independent, and he's willing to fight. And I think it's important, and Eric, you nailed it very well, the ways that the levers can be pulled from the White House and Nancy Pelosi and so forth. And so we at the grassroots, we realize that progressive change has to occur through protest, through organizing, through, we hope, eventually mass action in many ways, and also electorally, organizing for all sorts of elections, ballot measures, and sometimes candidates. And so we need to make clear through our actions, not just what we say, that when there are good candidates or good members of Congress or the legislature, and they come under attack by powerful interests because of what they've done, then we need to support them and have their back.
Well, I would add that especially I'm more interested in sometimes supporting an actual person who's doing something than a candidate who's promising something. Mm-hmm. So if somebody is in Congress taking a stand, I think all the people in the movement need to really rally. So besides Alan Grayson, let's look at California. Is there anybody we can stand behind or in front of?
Well, some of that answer to that question will come in about a week when we can look at the votes and see who has voted against this war under great pressure. And I'm confident that some of them from Southern California will come through, and some of them will go along with the White House war program. And that will give us, you know, very instructive interest. I know two who have spoken out from Northern California very effectively on this issue in recent days is, of course, Barbara Lee. She's been real good. And also Zoe Lofgren, who was on All Things Considered on NPR last Friday, and when asked whether an attack on Syria might be very limited and therefore not of great concern, she said, well, if there were incoming missiles to Washington, D.C. for even one day, I don't think we would consider that anything but an act of war. That's an almost Chomsky-esque analysis coming from a member of Congress with some real seniority. So I thought Zoe Lofgren is an example of some in Congress who are willing to speak really directly about what's at stake.
But, Norman, I'm not hearing the sense of an organized opposition. I mean, I don't think we can simply say, we'll know at the end of the vote who's going to stand up. I mean, I think we understand that if there's any chance to defeat this motion in Congress, certain people have to stake out the position of saying, I'm willing to take on the president 120%, and whether it passes or not, I want my reputation to be based on that I stood up against the strike.
And clearly, Eric, I think some people in Congress, you know, including the few I mentioned, are doing that. But we're still a number of days away from the vote. And ultimately, I don't believe that that kind of organization comes from within Congress. Those individuals are a collection of individual politicians. The Progressive Caucus is not a united force. We have the two co-chairs split on this issue. Raul Grijalva is voting against the war resolution.
Good for him.
Keith Ellison is voting for it. And so we have this just a wheelbarrow full of rabbits, you might say. And sometimes you get a bunch of those rabbits moving in the same direction, and that's good. But social change organizing, I think, is going to be manifested or reflected there, not initiated from Capitol Hill, as you know, by any means. So I think it's the key question is perhaps what's happening at the grassroots. And I think that we need a lot more coordination. As you know, at RootsAction.org, we've been working to galvanize more power that can be manifested with Action Arms online. We have just about 400,000 people now, active members at RootsAction.org, and we've been one of the few groups of this size or larger from the get-go opposing attacks on Iran and Syria. I have to give credit to Credo, which has done that, but I have to say that there are a number of other groups that are holding back. MoveOn.org, the largest, is sort of against the invasion, but it's sort of equivocal in terms of the messaging. They're giving various options, and
right,
there's a sort of an equivocation. Democracy for America has surveyed their members. The Bold Progressives group has surveyed their members. At this point, why are groups surveying their members? That's not leadership at all. Frankly, it's a bit craven.
Well, let's stay there a minute. One of the things that I think the cutting edge inside what's so-called progressive in the United States, in my opinion, is your open opposition to the United States as an imperialist power. So Bold Progressives, you know, they can talk about Elizabeth Warren, they can talk about more taxes on the rich, they can talk about Citizens United, but this is where the rubber meets the road. This is where your own history is made, which is, as you said, to say you're doing a survey in the middle of a war. Where were you in Vietnam? I did a survey. So, I mean, where is any level of courage in this? We'll get to Van Jones later, but say again the three groups. I'd like you to just tell our listeners one more time, just objectively, what the positions are of those three organizations again.
Well, MoveOn.org, which claims 8 million members, has in the last day sent out an email which offers an option to express opposition. It also provides some good information, and it also offers a humanitarian sort of aid package. But I think what concerns me is that it's expressed in a somewhat tentative way that is not done with, say, oh, we're going to defend Obamacare. Then it's all out. There's no equivocation. This is what we want you to do. It's vital. It's better than nothing. It's moving in a good direction. It's awfully slow, and it's sort of holding back to see which way the wind ends up blowing. And frankly, that's partly, I think, out of a habitual reluctance or refusal to challenge the Obama White House. And then you have...
And hold on just a second, Norman. Let me ask you this. Do we have 5 more minutes of your time? And then I want to go to the phones. If not, Norman, I got plenty of programming, but if you could hang for 5 minutes, that would be great.
5 is good. Thank you.
Remember, we're going to go to the phones in about 5 minutes. Try to focus on anything you want to do or anything you think people should do, and let's not focus on why Obama is not telling you a story that you agree with. Let's assume we know that. We'd like to emphasize at Voices from the Frontlines how you can help. And the reason it's good to have Norman Solomon back for the last 5 minutes is let me ask you that question. What can people do, Norman?
I think it really comes down to organizing. It's like a healthy forest. There are many different facets that are needed in aggregate, but people know what they're oriented or able or capable or have talents to do. I mean, communication information, whether it's neighborhoods, unions, community groups, religious organizations, really insist now that we propagate information and demand that members of Congress vote against this war resolution and also challenge the asserted prerogative of the White House to ignore the vote of the Congress and attack Syria anyway. I've also mentioned, you know, the online groups, and I'm biased because I'm part of rootsaction.org, but we're one of the few that has been willing and able to challenge directly on a fairly large scale the rush towards war and really, in a word, empire, because underneath all this, while we need to block this particular action, understanding the role of the United States in the world and challenging that policy that has so many different negative effects is really crucial.
Yeah, that's the voice of Norman Solomon. It's the voice of Eric Mann. I mean, one of the things I think for people in the U.S. is it's not the main thing, but when you travel abroad and you tell people almost anywhere in the world that I actually worked against the war in Iraq, I worked against the war in Vietnam, I was against the invasion of Syria and the attack on Syria, a lot of people say, wow, I didn't realize there are that many people in the United States against those policies. So I think it's not the main point, but it is important in terms of that there are people in the United States who do not want to live inside an empire, who do not want an aggressive military. And you can be biased, but I think rootsaction.org, I can be biased too. It simply means having a point of view, is the most aggressive, is the most internationalist, and people should check it out and scroll down. You could even find our President Obama campaign in May, but just scrolling down about 7 or 8 or 9 causes, you just see what a good mix of things they do. That's rootsaction.org. Norman Solomon, thank you very much for being on the show, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
All right.
Bye.
So this is Eric Mann. We're going to talk about Syria. I'm going to go to the phones. We're going to start with Tony in Hollywood. Tony, are you on?
I'm here.
Love to hear from you. What's on your mind, Tony?
Well, I guess I have a basic question. It's a really simple question. I don't quite understand. I mean, Obama is saying he's going to war to punish the Syrians, I guess, for their use of chemical weapons on their own people. But is there another reason? I guess I don't know enough about the issue. Is oil part of the issue? I'd just like to be clear about that, first of all.
I don't want to act like I know. I think that the United States understands that, yeah, oil is the issue in the sense of the United States identified, I think in about 1940, right in the middle of World War II, that the Middle East was going to be the strategic center for a world war for the next century, right? They were worried, of course, the Soviet Union is right on the edge of the Middle East. They were worried about Mossadegh coming to power in Iraq. They were worried about progressive governments that would use the oil for their own people, like Hugo Chavez did in Venezuela. Now, every minute they do stuff, Tony, it's not just for oil. It's for greater U.S. hegemony in the region, and as Norman was saying, and this is just my opinion, to destabilize the Assad regime right now is the card they're trying to play.
Why, or does, I guess I shouldn't say why, does Obama care about his legacy? I realize this is his second term. This is the term that he gets to sort of, you know, make decisions that don't affect him one way or another because he won't really can't run for presidency again. Does he care about his legacy with the American people and how this war might, you know, taint whatever legacy he's building or he's...
Well, let me say this, Tony, because we have other people on the line. It's a good question, and maybe Naima from Canoga Park, who's on our own Radio Intifada, would you like to tell us how you're assessing and also what you think we should be doing?
Giving me the time. Actually, I think the biggest target is, I mean, the target has been for a while, it's been Iran. I mean, that's my opinion, layman's opinion. I think that's the root of the problem. Not that I like the government or the system over there. I dislike them. I despise them. I do not agree with them in any way or shape or form. But I think that's why we have gone to Iraq, Afghanistan, in Syria now, possibly after Hezbollah pretty soon, just to undermine Iran's position. That's my take. But I just want to bring up one point.
Sure.
You have something called the Patriot Act, well, gift from the Clinton era. And in that, I guess, law, we were told that aiding and abetting any kind of terrorist organization, you go to jail, 100,000 fine, and all kinds of stuff, right? And it is proven that the money that U.S. allies, Turkey, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, pulling into the Syrian opposition right now, the majority of it, almost all of it, is going to those groups linked to Al-Qaeda.
And I'm going to have to hold you there again. Let me say this for our listeners. What we need you to do, and that was great, is you need to get to this is so-and-so, I have one point, this is my point, and then here's my question. I think everybody's doing great. I think what you pointed out is that the United States, that's what Norman and I were saying, there is no logic to its interventions based on any principles. It's only how
I answered your question about why we're going there. My second point was that right now, you're aiding and abetting Al-Qaeda-linked organization. That's the biggest problem. I think that's a point we can bring to the American public and let them know what's going on over there.
That sounds great. Let's try to do
Thank
that.
Thank you very much.
No, thanks for being on the show. Ward from downtown L.A., how you doing, Ward?
Thanks. The best thing I can do to help out is to make this one point. If you'll let me slip in a short second one later, that'll be fine.
But go ahead.
Okay, I heard you. How come I'm not hearing about the United States of America reducing its chemical, biological weapons of mass destruction that we pay so much to keep on hand here? Why do we keep it on hand if we couldn't use it?
Well, I think the question that's behind a lot of these questions is when a government wants to go to war, traditionally people support those wars. Almost all wars, not all, but almost all wars except for wars of national liberation, certainly any U.S. imperialist or European wars, have never, ever been fought for any humanitarian principles. Unfortunately, even the struggle against Hitler, which was at least a complicated, just glad they did it. But right now, you can't defeat these things by showing it's inconsistent. You know, I mean, well, we have chemical weapons, but they can't use chemical weapons. Or the United States can invade another country, but God forbid if another country invaded the United States. I think what we're trying to do is, what do we do with the mass psychosis when Obama's going to get up there? And I have to say, I'm really concerned that Van Jones says the president has now said there is a red line. It was not clear before whether the line was crossed. It's crossed. He's moving forward. I think we need to stand behind the president and send a clear message to Assad that this type of behavior is not acceptable. Well, if Van Jones, there was not one fact in that statement, just agreeing with you, Ward, that it just shows that standing by your president seems to be a decent enough argument.
Fadi from Miraloma.
I got to move on,
okay,
Ward.
Okay, go.
Thank you so much. Fadi, you still there from Miraloma?
Yes, hi, how are you? Can you hear me?
Yes, happy to have you on the show.
I wanted to try to do it fast. I hope I could. We have to remember that not long time ago, the Israelis used phosphorus on the people of Jenin, and there are thousands of people died there, and we did not move a finger. And if it's true the chemical was used, well, okay, in Syria, so we have to really find out who did it. And also we got to take in consideration, Syria is the last country in the Middle East that did not sign treaty with Israel and still have their Golan Heights occupied by Israel. And they still want to fight to get their land back, or they want to make maybe diplomatically try to get their land back, or United Nations resolutions or something. And the Palestinian issue has not been solved. And if Syria is gone, Israel will gain from this, will annex all of Palestine, and Syria and the rest of the Arab world will be just chaos, or will be just who cares whatever happened to them.
Well, Fadi, go ahead, finish. I'm sorry, finish your thought.
And then the United States, with the elite or whoever they are they're going to be hegemonized all the world. Obama was not his decision. Somebody is forcing him to do this because he promised he's going to close Guantanamo, he's going to bring the troops home, he's going to quit the war. He created more war in Afghanistan, and he's going more wars. So
thank you so much, Fadi. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Jennifer, I'm going to hold off. I'm going to read something for about 2 or 3 minutes, and then we're going to get to Mary and Santa Barbara. Hold on, Mary. A friend of mine who's a very good writer named Victor Wallace, he did a story in the Open Media Boston, of course, an anti-war op-ed. I want to read you some good paragraphs here against why it's a sham. First, the particular charges that the Assad forces have engaged in chemical warfare are dubious. The opposition forces have been military dependent on foreign fighters. The regime has been gaining the upper hand in combat. It invited the UN inspectors in and could have no interest in carrying out an attack for which they would be able to establish its culpability. The opposition, being at a military disadvantage, could hope for success only by creating a scenario of chaos within which an all-out PR campaign blaming Assad could set the stage for external military invention. The seeming unseeming haste reflected in Obama's call for an attack without waiting for the UN inspector's report is consistent with this interpretation. I think that's good. Second, whatever the truth of the chemical warfare charge, and this is Victor Wallace speaking, it is disingenuous for the U.S. government to set itself up as an arbiter in such matters, given its own past complicity in chemical attacks, supplying Iraq with chemical weaponry in the 1980s, later using phosphorus against Iraq in Fallujah, and supporting Israel in its use of the same substance in the 2008-2009 assault on Gaza. Evidently, whether or not chemical warfare should be condemned depends on who applies it. In other words, it can't be the real reason for the planned U.S. attack. Third, independently of the rationale, that is, even if the accusations against Assad were true, the idea that missile attacks on the country would constitute a remedy makes no sense. While they might indeed weaken the Assad regime and eventually make possible its overthrow, as happened with the Gaddafi regime in Libya, the outcome would be one of chaos and amplified suffering. Among the, quote, victorious opposition, the upper hand would go not to any democratic civilian organization, but rather to whoever was best armed. That might suit U.S. policymakers, but it makes a mockery of their proclaimed democratic values. That was Victor Wallace in Open Media Boston. And thanks for your patience, Mary in Santa Barbara. I hope that was helpful. Love to hear what you're thinking.
Oh, hi, Eric. Yeah, my name is Mary Johnston, and I'm here in Santa Barbara. I'm the vice president of the Veterans for Peace.
Great.
We have a demonstration of the cost of war called Arlington West. I imagine you've heard of it. And I thought I'd let you guys know about that and as a possible solution that you mentioned when you first started to the situation and how to show how you feel about it. And what we set up is crosses that demonstrate the number of soldiers killed in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we also have signs up. We've included one now for not entering Syria or Iran. We also include civilian deaths, which is, you probably can imagine, are so many more times the deaths of soldiers killed. And we have a flyer that we hand out that says the number of deaths killed in wars that go back to the, to the Civil War. And that's how we show, and we talk about how we feel about invading different countries and now especially Syria. So just thought I'd put that out there because something like that could be done on a modified basis, on a simpler basis, on a street corner in any city and the signs.
Well, Mary, I really want to thank you. Obviously, I've been asking listeners to call in and say, are they doing something? Thank you so much for doing that. Say the name of the group again. I just want to make sure I got it right.
We're the Veterans for Peace.
Right. And how do we reach you in Santa Barbara? Do you have a website?
We do. It's VFP, like Veterans for Peace, SB, like SantaBarbara.org.
Thank you so much, Mary. Everybody check out that website. Okay, listen.
We also have one in Santa Monica that's set up every Sunday.
Thank you so much. I'm going to move on. Rick from West L.A. on line 7.
Yeah, Eric, yeah. You said what we can do. I suggest, first of all, people go back and look at what happened in Vietnam. And look at all the millions of tons of chemical weapons the United States used on the Southeast Asians. And then they have the gall to speak about chemical weapons in anybody and anywhere. And I think also people should go back and look at the interview with Amy Goodman and General Wesley Clark, who actually told you what the deal is, what they're doing. This is the seventh country in the 7 countries in 5 years that they were going to take out. So we've already been told this for years, and how we're coming up now acting like we don't know, we don't know if it's this or we don't know if it's that, when we know these people are liars, and we know they're liars because as soon as they say anything or open their mouth, we know they're lying.
Thank you so much, Rick. We appreciate it. Now, listen, we have a Jeremy on line 8 from Lawrence, Kansas. That's great, who's listening online. Line 8, Jeremy, I'd like to hear from you.
Hi, Eric. Definitely the truth is the first casualty in war, so the first thing that we need to do is resurrect the truth, and that includes communicating with all of your fellow Americans and people across the country. That includes Congress people and the White House. Barrage them, call in the C-SPAN. The truth of this matter right now is that there are two main forces that have laid out their plan to try to balkanize the entire Middle East for the usage of their resources, and then in case of the Israeli extremists, for their so-called security interests. And that is what is going on here. We need the left to start talking about false flag operations. That is likely what this was. And there's not been one war that the United States has been involved in over a century that was not started by a deceptive provocation or a false flag operation. And so the left should not leave it to people like Ron Paul to put that out there and the long history of these treasonous operations. Thanks, Eric.
Really nicely said, Jeremy. You can say a lot if your brain is organized. That was terrific. Jennifer, put the number back on again. I'm sorry, that Congress number. 866-220-0044. That's the congressional switchboard. That we can all do, folks. 866-220-0044. I mean, that's a very concrete ask, and thank you for doing that. Let's come on. Everybody right after the show. Stephanie in Los Angeles on line 9. How you doing, Stephanie?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Glad to see you. What's happening?
I've not been hearing a lot about the human dignity that I believe is being lost. It may be hasty to call it a genocide. I really do believe it is a genocide. And I think there are several examples in the past when, particularly close to me is the Armenian genocide, but where non-governmental state actors, be it missionaries or the Red Cross, were very active attempting to help individuals, but as we're seeing in Syria, there's not enough help. So I understand why the United States wants to be involved. Obviously, our vantage point as an extremely strong country with a lot of geostrategic like interest in the region is obviously tarnishing what we can achieve, but I just feel that we're really forgetting that these are human lives, and there's a human, you know, there's a dignity to a human life.
Thank you, Stephanie. I think that's your point.
I just want to say, open up the debate in that vantage point, less about what is strategic for us, but more about protecting the life of an individual, no matter what their skin color, where they are, or what they believe in.
Thanks, Stephanie. Thank you so much. We got Joe in Santa Barbara. 1 minute, Joe, because I really want to get on Joe in Silver Lake and Kim in South. Yep.
Thanks for opening up the phone call to the listeners of KPFK. And what I think people do is right is get a hold of your congressman and tear their ear off. I mean, what could we do? Is like maybe we, instead of using bullets, why don't we aid all those civilians that are in camps outside of Syria? Well, what about those people? And why can't we use our money for good instead of invading?
And, Joe, there's no way that the missile strike is not going to kill civilians.
Right, exactly.
So, very good point, Joe. And I think, what did you say, burning the ear off Congress is a great one. Jennifer, could we put that number up real quick again? Joe, thank you so much.
Hey, Eric, good to hear you.
All right. Stay in touch on other times. 866-224. Here comes zero. Oh, I got a new one. Okay, got a couple minutes left. I want to get to, and thank you. We're going to go to line 2, and there's a Joe in Silver Lake. How you doing, Joe?
Yeah. Okay, Eric, hello, and hello, Norman. One thing I believe people could very helpfully focus on, and that is about this gas issue. Sure, gas is terrible, but the big killer over there has been the humble bullet. And let's not get wound up with yes gas, no gas, whose gas it wasn't, and who did it. And that's a big distraction. I have a reason. I'm a trauma assistant specialist therapist, and I think that the big play, you remember the mushroom cloud from the Iraq run-up, I think the policymakers try to choose something that will terrify the imagination of the people and paralyze the congresspeople, so all they've got the guts or strength to do is raise their hands for aye on the voting. And so I think that's a reason that there's this focus on the gas. Of course, I'm glad it's supposed to be outlawed, but the damn bullet does much more damage. So let's resist the distraction and the shock doctrine they're trying to impose by speaking about something that terrifies our imagination, and just say no, and alert others to that distraction, which may not count for the hardcore anti-war people, but I think it confuses and scares a lot of the public.
Joe, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Kim, you're the last one, and we waited for you. Get your minute in before they start making this theme song on us. Kim from South Pasadena.
I agree with many of your other callers, and I just want to alert everyone to a news report on KFI AM radio Saturday night reporting that the gas used in this Syrian attack on civilians was supplied by the Saudi Arabian government to Syria's rebels. So if that's true, that needs to be confirmed, and it just leads additional evidence to the whole thing that this thing is trumped up. We're gone from shock and awe to defer and degrade. And the whole thing's a sham, and we need health care and housing and infrastructure repair for our country, not more war.
Well, I think that was great. And at the Strategy Center, we have slogans like the social welfare state, not the police state, the environmental justice state, not the warfare state. And this is a warfare state. Let's make no bones about it. The United States and John Kerry claiming they care about civilians is enough to get us sick. The good thing is the listeners on KPFK. You guys have been great. Again, I'm really impressed by the quality of our listeners and your ability to get your point across and with great energy. So let's go now. 866-220. Whoever said burn the ear of Congress, I think it's a good slogan. 866-220. Everybody, I want to say, this is Eric Mann, your host, that I really leave almost every time we go to the phone so happy that we do this show, because the people out there are really great. They're thoughtful. They're passionate. They're on the money. If I say, could you please do it in 1 minute? People come up with great 1 minute. So thanks a lot for being so cooperative with the show, making it really worthwhile. Today, you know, we had Norman Solomon from Roots Action, and I'm being told to get out of here.